Transportation Committee will come to order. The clerk will note the roll, and I think she noted that we have a quorum. So, in that case, we better find somebody to move that the minutes from, let's see, what date? 15 February. February 15th are approved. So Representative Reeder looks like he wants to do that. Representative Reeder moves that the minutes of February 15th are up for sale here. Does anybody have any comments or questions about those? If not, all those in favor of approving the minutes of February 15th, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, the same size. The motion prevails. The minutes for 15 February are approved. The first item of agenda is House File 319, Representative Powell. And we need a motion to, let's see, Representative Cox will move House File 1319 will be recommended to pass to Public Safety. That's the next stop.
319.
319, is that what I said? No. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Representative Powell, we're awaiting your word.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I appreciate your time here this afternoon. As most of you know, I'm a paramedic with a large metropolitan ambulance service here in the metro area, and we're considered very busy. And I've had, I've worked in emergency medical services for 34 years, all of which have been on the street. So consequently, I've been to tens of thousands of scenes of emergencies and have seen my share of death and destruction. And in fact, there's probably not anybody in this room that has seen as much as I have. And you internalize it and don't take it home with you, but I will tell you that the worst things that we see are when it comes to children, whether they be sick or injured. And it is doubly frustrating when you know that in instances of car accidents, that almost in every instance, the injury or the death could have been prevented if the child had been properly restrained in a restraining device. Now, I've had some comments since I introduced this bill on why would it be government's business to get involved in something like this. And I will tell you that government gets involved and society gets involved a lot of times in protecting children. We don't allow children to be sexually abused. We don't allow them to be physically abused. We make sure that children are sent to school. So I think that society and government has a compelling interest in cases like this, especially in a case where children are in vehicles that are going down the street at what really whatever speed, and are subject at times to being in accidents through no fault of their own. So I think in most cases, in almost every, not every case, but in almost every case that I've been on over the years, and I've seen an awful lot of traffic accidents, when I see a child that's been killed or injured, I could almost invariably point to the fact that if the child had been properly restrained, then either the child would not have been injured at all, or a lot less seriously injured than they ended up being. So, consequently, when this bill was brought to me, I readily signed on. Anybody that does the job that I do, and we have some police officers behind me here that that understand the situation and do see these situations on a day-to-day basis, they understand the importance of this. So I would, I have several people here that are ready to testify, and I just wish that you would give them your time and consideration, and if you have any questions, certainly question them. They have some good answers, and I think that you'll find that this is a good bill and one worthy of passage. The first testifier is going to be Jeff Ogden, the president of AAA of Minnesota and Iowa.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeff Ogden. I'm the president of AAA Minnesota, Iowa.
I'm here representing the 600,000 AAA members across the state of Minnesota. AAA is leading a broad-based coalition of not-for-profit and for-profit organizations, including the Minnesota Safety Council, the Minnesota Medical Association, the Minnesota Pediatrics Association, and many others, most of which are here to testify today on behalf of the legislation. Others will speak about the health care and enforcement aspects of this bill. I wanted to speak on behalf of our 600,000 members who overwhelmingly support this legislation by an average of 78% based on multiple surveys that we have conducted within the past few months. Child passenger safety legislation is our top priority in this session in Minnesota, which has one of the weakest laws in the nation. Most people do not realize automobile crashes are still the number one killer of children in the United States, and that many of these deaths could be prevented. Nationwide, motor vehicle crashes killed a staggering total of over 2,000 child occupants 14 years of age and under in 2003 and injured over 250,000 others. Our nation's transportation systems and the vehicles that travel them were not originally designed and built with children in mind. Seat belts are designed to restrain adults, thus putting children at a greater risk of injury or death. Given that we are now a more mobile society and children are traveling more than ever, it is an enormous challenge to adapt our transportation system and vehicles to ensure our children's safety. In Minnesota, the current law states that children under the age of 4 must be in an approved child restraint system, and children ages 4 to 11 must be restrained, but allows that restraint to be an adult safety seat. Current legislation can give parents the false impression that after the age of 3, children are safe if they are restrained in a seatbelt. In fact, recent research indicates that appropriate child restraints for this age group reduce the injury rate in car crashes by 59% over adult seatbelts used alone. As we provide child passenger safety clinics around the state, the first question parents ask is, what does the law say? Since parents are looking to the law for guidance, we must be sure the information we provide is comprehensive. At AAA Minnesota, Iowa, we support the National Safe Kids campaign, which calls for the following change to Minnesota state statute by requiring children ages 4 through 8 to be properly secured in the appropriate child restraint system. The AAAs of Minnesota believe educating the public about the proper use of safety seats and restraints for all children is vital. We educate by conducting child passenger safety clinics, maintaining a permanent car seat fitting station, publishing brochures in conjunction with the Department of Public Safety, speaking to parent groups, and submitting articles to the media consistently talking about the importance of this issue. However, a second component in addition to education is needed to prevent child passenger deaths and injuries, and that is enhanced state traffic laws. For this component, we need your help and vote. Before I close, I would like to dispel some misunderstandings about this legislation. First, it provides parents a wide range of options by not specifying booster seats solely, but instead uses a broad definition, appropriate child passenger restraint system. Second, it is non-punitive for the first offense. The fine may be waived within 14 days by merely providing proof of providing an appropriate child passenger restraint system. Third, it is not a fundraising mechanism for state government. Approximately $42,000 was collected statewide last year for child passenger seat violations. That money is dedicated to the Minnesota Child Restraint and Education Account. This fund is used to support the statewide efforts of trained child passenger restraint specialists to distribute child safety restraints to low-income families, as well as educate all families as to the importance and proper installation of child restraint systems. I urge you on behalf of our membership to vote in favor of this legislation. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Now I can either take your questions or allow the medical and law enforcement communities to speak and answer any questions after that.
Are there any questions for Mr. Hodgman?
No.
If not, would you like to call your second witness?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That'd be Julie Philbrook from Hennepin County Medical Center.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Julie Philbrook, and I'm a registered nurse and a trauma prevention specialist at Hennepin County Medical Center. I've been a nationally certified child passenger safety instructor since 1997 and have trained more than 700 personnel across the state on this subject. While the Hennepin County Board has not taken an official stand on this legislation, HCMC, as a Level 1 Trauma Center, believes the prevention of motor vehicle-related injuries is a very important issue. HCMC treats motor vehicle crash victims from across the state on a daily basis. Of the more than 3,000 trauma patients we see annually, close to one-third of them are referred from rural communities. One aspect of my job is to follow up with families who have had children admitted to our hospital after a crash. When I go through the emergency department reports, there is a common thread for those children who end up in our pediatric intensive care unit. They were not properly restrained. One child's chart started out with this line: John is an 8-year-old male who was a restrained front seat passenger in a car that crashed at highway speeds. As I read further, I see that John suffered a ruptured bladder and intestine and had severed his spinal cord in the lumbar region, which is in the mid-back. And you can see the an example of that in the graphic photos that I distributed in your packet. My first question when I read this and see these injuries is, how was this child restrained? All I have to do is go and look at his body to see what has happened. You can see there the bruising from the left belt. According to his parents, he was restrained, but due to the fact that the adult seat belt did not fit him correctly, he put the shoulder harness behind his back. After further discussion, they told me that he had not been in a safety seat since his fourth birthday. They had even checked the law at the time and thought that since the law said age 4, they must no longer need any kind of seat. They also said that they always had him buckled up. They just never knew he also needed the shoulder harness to keep him safe. After a lengthy and very expensive hospitalization, John was transferred to a rehabilitation center to learn how to live his life with the paraplegia that was caused from the spinal cord injury. This bill is not a new law. We are just asking you to bring the current law into the 21st century. In 1981, when this law was written, booster seats did not exist. The research and database did not exist. We now know so much more today, and the bottom line is that children do not fit in adult seat belts. While parents, people may say they want less government regulations, they do look to the laws to help direct their actions. Just this week, I spent 20 minutes on the phone with a parent of a 4- and 6-year-old, explaining to her all the reasons why her children need to be in a booster seat. While talking, she pulled the law up online and said, "The law says they only need to be in a child restraint till they're 4, so that I'm not breaking the law by having them in a seat belt, right?" I said, "While you would not be breaking the law, you could possibly break your child." As we hung up, she said she'll probably keep doing what she's been doing and just use the seatbelt as long as she could not get a ticket. This current law counteracts all the education efforts we are trying to make across the state. The proposed changes to the child safety restraint law will save lives and prevent life-changing injuries by providing guidelines to parents on the safest way to transport their children. Please help parents and caregivers provide the best protection for their children by updating the current law to reflect what research and real-life crashes have revealed. Children need to be properly restrained in systems designed for their little bodies. I'd now like to invite a guest up, and this is Carly. Carly and her mom are going to come up, and we're going to quickly demonstrate to you how simply a booster can make a difference in how a child rides in an adult seatbelt. The seat that we're going to show is a basic booster seat that retails for about between $10 and $15. I calculated out if a parent puts away a quarter a day over a two-month period, they'd have enough to buy this basic booster seat. So here we have Carly. Carly is 5 years old. She is taller than the average. In fact, yesterday a child that we used for demonstration was was 8 years old and about the same height. So it really depends on how the child fits in the vehicle. But you can see now Carly sits in the seat. If she was to put her bottom all the way back, which would be optimum, her knees don't bend. So now her mom's going to put her seatbelt on her. And this is a vehicle seat. And the problem we have is that the belt does not fall over the strong parts of the body. We want it over the bones, over her pelvic bone and over her shoulder. You can see that it starts to ride up over her abdomen, and then it cuts her across the face. Now, typically, over a little bit of a ride, Carly's going to want to get a little more comfortable because her knees don't bend, and this is what kids do. Okay, so there we go. Now what she's going to want to do is she's going to want to put that shoulder harness behind her back, just like the boy I referenced in the story that I told. And now we have a real serious problem. Frontal crashes are the most common. and they are the most deadly. And so what happens is, if your car stops, whether you have to hit something in front of you, or even a dog runs out in front of you, and you slam on your brakes, everything in your vehicle is going to go at the speed you were traveling, including Carly's upper body. So now she folds over the seatbelt, which is now worked up over her abdomen, and can tear her spinal cord. Now I want to show you a difference that this simple $12 booster seat can do for Carly. So we're going to have her hop down. And she's going to just hop back in. It does not get installed. It can easily be left with grandma at daycare. It's a lot simpler than a car seat. A lot of people think they're a pain, but they're actually really easy to use. They just set on top. She uses the adult seatbelt, but now you can see she's got a bend to her knees, and this helps keep it low on her hips, and then the shoulder harness rides where we need it. Very simple, but a life-saving device. I can take questions at this time, or I can wait till the rest of the testimony.
What you want? This is Senator Gonzalka.
Could have been Lloyd Seibert, too, but that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I forgot your name.
My name is Julie Philbrook. Julie.
Good to meet you. I teach defensive driving courses for seniors, and we talk about how to buckle up kids, and it's very important to me, too. But my one question is, why do we have 9-year-olds on here when most of the data is up through age 7? And I'm just, I co-authored on here. I'm interested in the bill, but I feel like it might be a little bit too far, and I just want to get your comments on
that. Mr. Chair, Representative,
it's
a very good question. We're actually using the standards that are coming from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, and they are feeling that the size of an average 9-year-old would probably fit into the seatbelt safely. The studies that are just starting to come out, it's a relatively new thing. I've been using maybe smaller population sizes, and so that might be why you're seeing the lower ages. To be honest with you, when I go into classes and I measure kids that are in third, fourth grade, some of them really aren't even big enough to be in an adult seatbelt. It really comes down more to fit. This is actually kind of on the lower end for some children to sit without a booster seat. But again, some of the studies have been using narrow populations. But the national standard from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration really sets the standards for all traffic safety issues. Its recommendation is the average of a child up through age 8, so to age 9. Does that answer your question?
Other questions for Ms. Silbrook? Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Philbrook. I'm just curious, why don't we use just a standard height and weight instead of using an age on this?
I can speak to it, but I might ask. Okay. I'd like to ask Mr. Ogden to come and address that, since they worked out some of the language for this, if that would be all right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Representative. There is, as evidenced by the laws that have been passed across the United States, there is no perfect standard that is going to fit everybody and every age. So the majority of states have used age and weight, and we have used and in there to deal with older children who still might not be the proper weight, but in order to get it accepted by the vast majority of the populace who may look at a certain aspect of it as being just out of bounds and out of normalcy. So what we have used is a combination that maintains flexibility, because we have heard in prior years the recommendations by committees that we have brought this before in the past, and what's recommended by the national standard bodies, which is the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Pediatric Association. So we realize that this is not going to cover 100% of the children. It's going to cover the vast majority. And so what we have tried to do is put forth a bill that is very workable, is a significant step forward, is flexible for the enforcement community, and is primarily educational. Again, we specifically put in that the fine can be waived at the first offense, because our intent is just to get people into a safe situation. And so we tried to cover the broadest range that was recommended by the national various national expert bodies.
A follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you. And I guess my question here would be, you're going to have some kids who are obviously fast growers here, and what we've done here is they're going to go past the 80 pounds. We put them into the constraints of still having to wear the, be in the booster seat past the age of 7 if they're 95 pounds. Is that correct? Am I reading this wrong?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative, that's why we put the and in there. That allows someone who is faster growing but under the age of 9 would be allowed to sit in an adult safety seat because their body structure would grow faster and be safe in that situation. So actually it's age and weight. So if they are outside of either of those, then they would be legally restrained in an adult system. Mm-hmm. So that's we put that in there intentionally to be as flexible as possible.
Okay.
Instead of an or.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions?
One more.
Representative Gazelle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm thinking about running for office and having a pickup in a parade with kids in the back. Is there a lot of data that that's harmful, especially in parades?
That is a segment that is fairly narrow, again, we drafted it to be as flexible as possible. If there are specific segments like that that we could accommodate, and we'd be open to discussion. As long as the parade is not moving at 40 miles an hour.
Yeah. Representative Steinberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I talked to Representative Powell earlier about this. Is there a set speed that would be deemed safe, like in a parade or for rural members that are transporting their kids like out to the field, 10 miles an hour, in the back of the pickup, 5 miles an hour? Would you have a speed recommendation for that?
Mr. Rogers.
I think we would want to be under 20, and we would want to do some consultation with our medical community experts, but certainly I think your normal parade is 5 or 10 miles an hour to get as much exposure as possible. So I don't think we have an exact number, but we certainly want it to be under 20.
Representative Soderstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just a comment. My grandchildren live in Indianapolis, and I believe they have this kind of a law out there. And my grandson, who's 8 years old, he likes to sit in that seat because he could see out. Mm-hmm. You see, children can't see out the window. And he really likes, he doesn't seem to mind that. He's rather small anyway, but the children don't mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if council can give us some background on what the law is as it relates to transporting anyone in the back end of a pickup truck.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I am not aware of any specific provision other than the general statutes regarding child endangerment, which might apply in situations like that under certain circumstances.
Representative Larson, are you through?
I'm through.
Okay. Well, we have Representative Olson.
You can't put down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering, and I'm not sure who would need to answer this, but I'm wondering if there's any history behind Provision C on page 2, the pickup provision. Were there a series of accidents or deaths caused by that scenario? Agricultural concerns growing up on the farm, I'm wondering how this would apply to that.
Have you talked with the
We have work crews and take a quick jog down the road in the back of a pickup. I mean, it happens every day.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, to my knowledge, we don't have any studies on that segment. It is certainly not our intent to restrict, certainly on private property, primarily agricultural issues on private property. The intent is over the highway, and that's really where we're focused. So the research, as we stated earlier, the most recent research just came out in 2003, where this broad a segment has been published with the results of people in seatbelts or children in seatbelts from the ages of 4 to 7 or 8. So we've just obtained, we've had information from personal experience, but the statistical information of across a broad range is within the last 2 years. So that segment has not been studied specifically.
Mr. Chair, and begging your pardon, sir, I didn't quite hear your name.
Jeff Ogden.
The last?
Ogden.
Ogden. Thank you, sir. Mr. Ogden, are you aware of any accidents or deaths that have occurred in this scenario?
I can't speak from personal experience that I have any information on deaths that have occurred in those situations. But I would certainly defer to individuals who may have more knowledge than I would on that.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Powell.
Representative Olson, I have. I just tell you anecdotally, I have seen not so much kids, but people tossed out of back pickup trucks, certainly. On the issue of this on private property, I think I agree with Mr. Ogden. It's not my intent, and I don't know. I haven't reread the law, but it's not my intent to restrict anything on private property.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Olson,
just a comment. I didn't mean my question to be concerned about private property, because I don't see how this could apply to private property. I just wanted to know what kind of record there is of accidents. It's pretty obvious that if there's an accident where somebody's riding in the back of a truck, that they're likely going to get thrown out. I mean, that's pretty obvious. I'm just curious as to how much that has occurred, because it's been going on for probably since trucks were on the road. And I've never seen it come up before. And I know I was raised and grew up in a situation where when we did things like that, we were more cautious and drove more defensively, except when we knew we were hanging on tight.
Representative Horton.
I don't know.
Okay, Representative Moore. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the committee, to the issue of operating a pickup on private property, when I look at page 1, subdivision B, subdivision 5, statute specifically talks about operating a motor vehicle on the streets and highways of the state. When I flip the page over to page 2 and go down to paragraph C, which is where we're talking about a pickup, I don't see that same language, and I would say that there is some danger that it could be interpreted, paragraph C, line 15, or beginning at line 15, it could be interpreted to mean operating a pickup on private property, because part of the statute talks specifically about operating on a public street, and this particular provision does not.
Mr. Chairman, I'd Mr. Williams on that.
Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, in this provision is located, or would be located, in Chapter 169 of the statute. And under Section 169.02, it provides that the provisions of this chapter, meaning highway traffic regulations, relating to the operation of vehicles refer exclusively to the operation of vehicles upon highways. So that this, there have been some provisions such as the DWI provisions that used to be in this chapter, where the wording was different, where the reference was to anywhere in the state, and that would include private property as well as on public streets and highways. But in the absence of such legislation, the application of paragraph C would only be on public streets and highways.
Mr. Williams, you are in all probability quite correct. I'm simply reading this statute from a standpoint of what could maybe be made as an argument. Mm-hmm. And I could easily see an interpretation of paragraph C, at least from a standpoint of making an argument in court, that it applies to private property. Mm-hmm. And And to follow up on, if I'm in error on that, then perhaps we ought to be removing the language on the first page that discusses or uses the language of being operated on the streets and highways. Just to make it consistent is what I'm referring to. Well, I think we'll keep moving along here. Well, excuse me. What did you say, Vincent?
Just one further question or comment in regards to what Representative Gazalka said, and I have been in a few parades, and I know most of us here have, and it's kind of a great crowd getter for having the kids in the back of the pickup on some hay bales and waving from the backside. And I guess I would oppose this from the standpoint that all those people would be breaking the law after this. If there's some provision that we can put in here that basically says if the vehicle is traveling less than a certain speed, say 5 miles an hour, that they're exempt, something that I can see that this is going to be a problem in the future, and I hate to make a law that continues to tie the hands of our general public in a manner that it was unintended.
Representative Nelson has an amendment which may clear some of this up, but Representative Powell.
If I may, I would like to suggest we get through testimony first so we have all the testimony in front of us before we have any thoughts on amendments, if that's all right with the chairman.
All right with me. Okay. Representative Roy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Powell. I just was kind of looking at these numbers, and I'm in support of it generally, and it just kind of thinking like in marketing for parents, if we could consider, you know, either going down to 8 and 80 or up to 9 and 90, just for ease of, you know, one way or the other, it just seems like it'd be easier for parents or someone to grasp, you know, where you've got kind of the 90 pound and 8 year, you know, it just seems like it'd be easier to market it. And to, you know, for parents to get on board and say, hey, you know, just to keep it simple. But I think generally it's the right thing to do, and if we can work out some of the details that they're talking about, I'm certainly on board. But I don't know if you've considered that or...
Mr. Chairman. Representative Lilly, Mr. Ogden and I looked at each other and kind of smiled. No, we didn't think of that. And from a marketing standpoint, I get your point. And again, that's once we get our testimony through here, I certainly am open to reasonable amendments that make this thing better. I certainly am.
All right. Okay. You want to call your next witness in?
Certainly. Next witness will be Dr. Joss Petrickin from Mayo Clinic. He's a pediatrician there.
Welcome to the meeting, Doctor. Please identify yourself for the sake.
Certainly. General Earhart and members of the committee, my name is Josh Petrickin. I'm a pediatrician practicing at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. I'm currently the president-elect of the American Academy of Pediatrics Minnesota chapter, which represents the pediatricians of the state. I'm here today to express the Minnesota AAP's support and the Minnesota Medical Association's support for this important legislation. I applaud Representative Powell and others for introducing this important legislation to update Minnesota's child restraint laws. Current law requires children under the age of 4 to be restrained in a child's restraint system. However, our current law doesn't address the safety needs of children 4 to 8 years of age. The problem is that seatbelts are not made for children. As we saw in the demonstration, seatbelts hit children across the face or the neck, which causes children to place the shoulder belt either under their arm or behind their back. Thus, when children move directly from a toddler seat to a seat belt, they're not only uncomfortable, but they're unsafe. I'd like to draw everyone's attention to a handout that should have been distributed before the meeting, which shows a demonstration of a typical six-year-old in a 35-mile-an-hour motor vehicle crash. The upper bar is a child appropriately restrained in a belt positioning booster seat, and the lower is in a seat belt with the shoulder strap behind his back. And the most important thing to pay attention to is the arc of the head of the passenger during this 35-mile-an-hour motor vehicle accident. In the booster seat, there's hardly any movement at all, and in the seatbelt, the child's head goes all the way between his legs and bounces back. With this in mind, it's easy to see why 71% of serious injuries to 4 to 8-year-olds in motor vehicle accidents are to the head or face. Children in seatbelts alone are 4 times more likely to suffer head and brain injuries as compared to children who are properly restrained in a belt position in booster seat. Although seatbelts are better than a child being unrestrained, booster seats dramatically decrease a child's risk for serious injury. And it's for this reason that the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration recommends children between 4 and 8 be restrained in a belt position in booster seat. A June 2003 study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association examining greater than 3,600 motor vehicle accidents involving more than 4,200 children found that the odds of injury were 59% lower in children between 4 and 7 years of age in belt positioning booster seats than those in seatbelts alone. Children in the study in belt positioning booster seats had no injuries to their abdomen, neck, spine, or back, or lower extremities, whereas children in seatbelts alone had injuries to all body regions. According to Minnesota crash statistics, 84% of 4 to 8-year-olds involved in crashes who were properly restrained received no injuries at all. Child safety is greatly increased when children are in belt positioning booster seats. Pediatricians continue to educate parents of the use of booster seats, but many parents look to state law to determine when to graduate children, when to graduate their child to a seatbelt. One study that explored the reasons for booster seat use and non-use found that parents look to the state laws for guidance. One respondent stated, quote, "The state law indicated the child safety seats were only needed to be used until age 4. I figured that meant a seatbelt was safe for my 4-year-old. Minnesota would not be the first state to enact booster seat legislation. There are currently 28 other states and the District of Columbia that have enacted legislation requiring the use of booster seats. Booster seat use is increasing, but we have a long way to go. According to the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, only 30% of children ages 4 to 8 are currently in booster seats. We can do better. Just like when we passed Minnesota's child restraint law for children under 4, updating the current law would let parents know the importance of having their children properly restrained. This law isn't trying to tell parents how to parent. It acknowledges that seatbelts are not manufactured for children, and we can reduce injuries to our children by passing this legislation. I'll thank you for your time on this important issue, and I'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Questions for the doctor? Thank you very much. And our next list is Charlotte Real. Officer Real. Dakota County Sheriff's Office. Please identify yourself.
Chairman Earhart, members of the committee. My name is Charlotte Rail, and I'm a deputy sheriff for Dakota County. I have been involved in law enforcement field for 25 years, and I have worked as a deputy for 11 years. I became involved in child passenger safety in 1999, and I have been a nationally certified child passenger safety instructor since 2000. As an instructor, I train police officers, public health professionals, firefighters, and others using the National Child Passenger Safety Curriculum. I also act as an educator for parents and caregivers on the correct installation and use of child restraints, along with best practice recommendations for transporting children in motor vehicles. As a child passenger safety educator in the law enforcement field, parents repeatedly ask me the same two questions. What is the law? And if children from 4 to 8 years old are safer in booster seats, why aren't they included in the law? Parents ultimately are responsible for the welfare of their children, but they are looking for guidance on the safest way to travel. The Minnesota Child Restraint Law has been in effect for many years, and parents rely on this law to give them those answers. Our knowledge of child passenger safety has grown greatly since our Child Restraint Law was enacted. Testing procedures have changed over the years to include more instrumented crash dummies, and crash tests and studies of actual vehicle crashes involving children have resulted in a better knowledge of how crash forces affect children in child restraints and seat belts. This has led to changes in safety standards for child restraints. These studies have shown that children between 4 and 8 years old have significantly fewer injuries when using an appropriate child restraint or belt positioning booster seat. Seatbelts are designed for adults and do not fit children well. Relying on them to protect their children in a crash can cause injuries and death. Passenger safety for children from 4 through 10 years of age is now addressed in Minnesota's current seatbelt law, which requires that children over 3 and under 11 years of age must wear a properly adjusted and fastened seatbelt, including both the shoulder and lap belt, when the vehicle is so equipped. Unfortunately, because the adult seatbelt does not fit children in this age group properly, it is very difficult for them to follow the law. As a law enforcement officer, I can tell you that the majority of children in this age group riding in vehicles that I have stopped were using the adult seatbelt alone, and most were using the belt incorrectly. The most common misuse issues I see are children slouching, which places the lap belt across their stomach, and putting the shoulder belt behind their back or under their arm to keep it from rubbing across their face. This use can cause severe internal injuries in a crash. It also leads to improper seatbelt use as they get older. Updating the child restraint law to include children from 4 through 8 years old would get these children into a restraint system appropriate for their physical characteristics, allowing them to ride safely and legally. Law enforcement officers daily use discretion in enforcing our laws. Obviously, it's difficult to tell the difference between a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old in the case of the child restraint law, or between a 10-year-old and 11-year-old to determine seatbelt use. The current child restraint and seatbelt laws give officers reasons to interact with children by asking their ages to help determine appropriate restraint use. I personally use these encounters as an opportunity to educate parents and children on the importance of proper restraint use when riding in a motor vehicle. The proposed age change in the child restraint law will not require officers to change the way we do our jobs. We will still ask children how old they are and use discretion in issuing citations. The age change would, however, get more children riding lawfully with a properly fitting restraint. In my job, I see crashes firsthand. I have had the experience of going to a fairly minor crash and finding a 2-year-old screaming, but uninjured, buckled into her child restraint, according to the law. Her mother was walking around uninjured because she, too, had been wearing her seatbelt, according to the law. Unfortunately, the 5-year-old daughter, who was also wearing a seatbelt as required by the law, sustained internal injuries and had to be transported by ambulance to the hospital. Our current child restraint law recognizes that children from infancy to age 4 are not adequately protected by adult seatbelts and need child restraints to keep them safe when riding in the vehicle. Our seatbelt law requires seatbelt use for children from 4 through 10 years of age, but we now know that adult seatbelts do not properly fit most children in this age group. I will continue in my efforts to educate parents and caregivers in the safest way to transport their children, but I also urge you to support these changes to the child restraint law so the next 5-year-old I see at a crash walks away with the rest of her family. Thank you.
Are there any questions? I don't see any. Representative Powell, are you ready for amendments?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am.
And we have Representative Nelson with an amendment.
Mr. Chairman and members, on page 2, line 16, after the word 9, please insert, on the streets and highways of this state at a speed greater than 15 miles per hour. Again, on the streets and highways of this state at a speed greater than 15 miles per hour. And I would move that amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any discussion of the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I consider that a friendly amendment.
All right. I see no discussion. All in favor of the amendment, have it. Please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted, and we now have the bill as amended before us. Are there other questions? Comments? Representative Dietrich.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question, and that is on the pickup truck or sports utility piece of this, why did we just choose the age 9 and not add a weight requirement there also?
Representative Powell.
Let's call up Mr. Ogden again to explain that.
Actually, I think we took the drafting of this from recommendations from what we've seen in the past in the Department of Public Safety. And so I'm not sure that the thought process was not that being in the back of a pickup is an issue regardless of weight. That whereas weight in the seat belt is an indicator of your body structure, which is what makes that seat belt safe or unsafe. So I believe that was the thought process in drafting up the legislation. So.
So are you saying that you think that would be maturity level by age?
That's right. Driving in the back of a pickup, if I can, Mr. Chair, and address it on a little broader basis, is really a broader issue. And currently 30 states have legislation dealing with driving in the back of a pickup. 20 states do not, including Minnesota. So really that segment is a little bit broader than the main intent of this bill, which is to deal with the seatbelt issue in the back seats. So I'm not sure that we put as much thought into that's the rationale behind that specific segment as we did just the seatbelt and the child passenger restraint in the back seats. I'd like to be able to give you a better answer than that, but that's what we have.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Paul, regarding enforcement, I heard your officer Powell say, Rail, I'm sorry, excuse me, Officer Rail, I'm making you an officer already. Officer Rail say something that there's not going to be any need for further qualifications or things for enforcement. I'm just wondering, do you see anything as of this bill going into law of enforcement requirements for law enforcement, whether it's local, state, or county?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Anderson, two answers to this and, that I have, and there may be more, but the first answer is this was not made to be so much punitive but educational, and I think that's the point. Number two, I have applied for a fiscal note that will be that would probably address and ask a lot of those questions as it goes to the fiscal note process, and we'll know that when it goes to public safety. But that is a good question, one that we've thought about. Mr. Ogden, you have anything to add to that?
We went out to the law enforcement community and took their input in drafting this because we realized that was a concern. There's a couple of issues. One, they already have to make determinations in the current law with regard to enforcement. And also, as Representative Powell said, this is not intended to be punitive, so the law enforcement agencies already have discretion as to whether they see an actual unsafe situation or not. So we have received endorsement from over 50 law enforcement entities across the state, and they don't see that this is going to be an issue. They see this as the testimony demonstrated that they're already doing this as part of their job with other, with this law and other laws, so they don't see this as an extension or a requirement for additional resources.
Thank you.
Other questions? Looks like we're ready for vote. And let's see, Representative Cox would Renee's motion to House File 218 and recommend to pass to the Public Safety Committee. As amended. Thank you. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? House File 218 is on its way to the Public Safety Committee. Thank you.
Chairman, committee members, thank you. I think we were walking out here with a better bill. I appreciate the help on it.
Thank you. yeah, took 55 minutes. We still got time, right?
No.
Okay.
She stands out of gun.
All right. We are ready then for.
I don't know about this.
House File 204, Garofalo.
Oh, yeah, right.
How do I say that?
Garofalo, Mr. Chairman.
Garofalo, I'm sorry. I really don't understand. We got two bad names up there for pronouncing.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Earhart.
We need a motion, let's see. Representative Anderson moves House File 204 and recommends it to pass to the Public Safety Committee. And please start your testimony.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the appreciate you hearing this bill today and the opportunity to present it to the committee. Now, first of all, in keeping with House tradition, this is my first bill as a first-term representative, so I have brought treats for the members of the committee. Last night when I was shopping for the appropriate snack for committee members, I thought that it would be appropriate if I bought snacks that perhaps personified the personality of some of the committee members. So initially I picked up a box of Twinkies. They're yellow, they're energetic, kind of like Representative Gazulka, Representative Cox, or perhaps Representative Dietrich. And then after walking a little bit farther down the aisle, I found a different snack that was more appropriate for a member of this committee. And I think it represents the personality of my good friend, Representative Steve Simon, which, of course, are ding-dongs.
Great.
So I'll pass these around.
Oh, Representative Nelson?
Representative Garofalo, it's my understanding that you have an oral amendment you'd like us to put on this.
Yes, sir.
Now, I'm willing to offer that if you don't have any more surprises in your bag.
Yes, sir.
Remember whose office you're closest to.
Yes, yeah. Representative.
On line 11, Mr. Chairman and members, delete the word mounted. Insert the word located. Line 11, page 1, delete the word mounted, insert the word located.
And, Mr. Chairman, I would consider that a friendly amendment.
Well, let's see. You want to incorporate that? Why don't we do a lot of work then? You're incorporating that in House File 204.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill pertains to the traffic signal override system that we currently have in place in the state of Minnesota. This bill would prohibit the possession of such a override device and prohibit its use in a motorized vehicle. With me today, I have the highly respected chief of police from the city of Lakeville, Representative Steve Strand, who can offer some further technical insights and law enforcement perspective on this legislation. So, Chief Strand.
Well, the council informs me we have to vote on that amendment. I'd like to cut short a few of these things, but I see that I'd be called to account if I don't. So all those in favor of Representative Nelson's amendment, which was changed, we'll be doing away with my copy now. Thank you. It changed mounted on line 11 to located.
Yep.
Well, any discussion on that amendment? If not, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And all opposed, the same sign. The amendment now becomes part of House File 204. Please proceed.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as I stated earlier, this bill prohibits a person from operating a motor vehicle that contains one of these traffic signal override devices. It's needed to maintain the integrity of the current traffic signal override system. And here to speak on behalf of law enforcement perspective is Chief Steve Strand from the Lakeville Police Department.
Welcome back. We love it here. I know that's why you're back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. It is good to be here today. This is a bill that was passed out of this committee and I think passed the House last year. I'm sorry. My name is Steve Strand. I'm the Chief of Police in the City of Lakeville, and I'm also here on behalf of the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association to also express our full-throated support for this important bill. And also to thank you, Chair Earhart, for sort of leading the way. I know that this was an issue that you cared about last year when I was in the legislature, and I was played a small part in forwarding this. Sort of interchangeable terms. Sometimes you'll hear the word MIRT, M-I-R-T, mobile infrared transmitter, opticom emitter. Sometimes they're called preemption devices. All the same thing. Here's an example of one right here that I've got on the desk that was actually came right out of one of our evidence bags. This was seized by our department last year, and I'll talk for a second about that. But they're all the same thing, and they have to do with changing red lights to green, and most of you have seen that in action with emergency vehicles. You'll see the white light, the bright white light that comes on. That means it's going to stay green. And it also makes sure that nobody coming the other way is going to get a green light, including emergency vehicles, and notifies them what's going to happen. It's a great system. It cuts down response times for emergency services, for police, fire, ambulance, and EMS. Last couple of years, there's been an increasing awareness of private companies selling these to private citizens. And they buy them because they don't want to wait for green lights. And they'll be activating the opticom system in order to just speed up traffic for themselves. I passed out a catalog page that I think most of you should have. This comes from a catalog called Guns and Stuff. I do not subscribe to this catalog. Somebody gave it to me, but you'll see on the left they're marketing this MIRT device, and at the top you'll see it says fire, police, EMT, first responders, and over way at the right they mention private, which apparently means if you're in a hurry you can use these as well. And something else I wasn't aware of, but just below that, it's also a great gift idea. We have seen a few of these. As I mentioned, this particular device came from our evidence bin. We seized this from an individual in April of last year driving a Hummer. He said that he had spent $600 for this device. And I did test it yesterday. I took it to an intersection where there was no other traffic, and it works. It does turn the light green. He just had it mounted with suction cups inside of his vehicle, and somebody observed him using this to turn lights green, called in on the cell phone. We stopped him and seized it from him. So why the necessity of the law? Because the current law is somewhat ambiguous in the state of Minnesota about these devices. We seized this under emergency lighting. It is technically illegal to have, but it's a little bit ambiguous, and it's hard to prosecute, and it's certainly hard for citizens to understand, is this prohibited or not? One of the other things that I passed out was this sheet. This comes from the Internet, from the MIRT website. It's really hard to find out, is this legal in my state or not? Am I supposed to have this? Is it against the law? The only thing they really have is this particular link that directs you to the Department of Transportation website for the state in which you live. So in other words, they throw it off on the purchaser to decide whether this is legal or not. And I don't know of any state where it is legal, but they don't really deal with that. They just want you to buy the product, obviously. Once they get their money, they don't care. But the DOT website in Minnesota doesn't really talk about it. So both in terms of consumer awareness and in terms of prosecution, I think it makes sense to make this very specific and very specifically prohibit the use of these devices. Other than some seizures and some prosecutions, have there been a lot of incidents that have resulted in injuries or deaths? There have not been. I can't say any for you, but as I mentioned, I think Representative Hornstein last year when I presented this bill asked that question. I think we should be ahead of the curve before there is a tragedy, before the choking child or the person having a heart attack suffers because emergency response is delayed. So, again, the Chiefs of Police Association strongly supports this important bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you very much. Great to see you. Welcome back, Chief Scran, and we miss you, but you have an excellent replacement. I guess I'm curious about, in the status quo here, and this is a great bill, and I'll support it again. What did you do with this guy in the Hummer? I mean, did you just let him go, or did you charge him with anything?
That's a great question, Representative Hornstein. We seized that device, again, under the idea that under emergency lighting, it was an illegal emergency light. We may have some difficulty if he came in and demanded it back, because the law is a little bit ambiguous. But we could not prosecute him, because our city attorney felt that the law was not specific enough to warrant a prosecution. Again, a reason for the law.
So, Mr. Chair, so there's nothing on his record, no warning, no... That's it?
No, sir.
Okay.
I assume from looking at the person that the regular route transit vehicles, we're talking about buses, transplants and buses here? Or?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Actually, under the existing legislation, under at line 18, you see the definition is a vehicle engaged in providing regular route public transit. It does provide an exception for that, Mr. Chairman.
Well, do they, I guess my question is, do they, transit vehicles normally use this, or is this?
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that on the light rail line on Hiawatha, this is in place, and I'm not aware of other transit operations using this, but the capability may exist. Perhaps Chief Strand could offer some insight into some of this.
Mr. Chair. My understanding is similar to Representative Garofalo's, that it's used for, especially along Hiawatha, for the LRT. And I believe, and staff may be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but it's written in such a way that if there are future transit developments implemented, that it would allow for those as well.
Okay.
Like perhaps the Cedar Avenue busway.
Are there any other questions or comments? Representative Wilson.
I appreciate it because you noticed I didn't take a ding-dong or a Twinkie that you sent me this gift. That's very nice. I also find it ironic that the MRT people would refer them to MnDOT rather than Department of Public Safety. Kind of a little steer them where they wouldn't get an answer, and gee, nothing against them. Let's sell it. And I'm sure that's by no accident on their part. And I apologize. Did you win or lose that case? Did you win or lose the case on this one?
Oh, I think you stepped out while I was answering Representative Hornstein's question that he wasn't charged because of the ambiguity of the case.
And you still have possession? You still have possession of his thing?
We seized it, and he has not asked for it back.
Okay. I think we have some legislation in the hopper on seized property coming up, Chief, so you may want to follow that.
Does the governor ever raise the advice of the work? Was it Ventura that had one? Somebody, I think it was a former...
Charlie.
Charlie. Yeah. Okay. Enough of that, I guess. All right. Well, let's see. The Representative Anderson, excuse me, recommends this House File 204 be recommended to pass and referred to public safety. He raises his motion. As amended. All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The bill passes and heads for public safety.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Reeder. Thank you for the truth.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 614.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to explain a little bit. I do have an amendment which will bring it in line with the Senate bill that's passed, but I'd like to explain a little bit of the bill prior to that, if that's okay. House File 614 deals with the slow-moving vehicle emblems. Under the present statute, slow-moving vehicles are allowed to have an emblem which is visible basically in the daytime, but not too well at night. This bill would provide some illumination for the emblem at night. It's not a mandatory, it's a May proposition. And basically, that's about it. And I do have one of the testifiers to demonstrate the thing, unless there's some questions. But prior to that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Amendment A050042 to bring the bill in order with this Senate bill. What the amendment does, it deletes the portion that pretty much restricted the manufacturer or the item to a certain manufacturer. This eliminates it and takes away that possibility. It makes it wide open so we don't have to, it doesn't identify any particular manufacturer, this illuminating device.
Any questions on the amendment A050042? The comments? If not, all in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Same sign. The amendment is adopted. And we now have the bill as amended.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to bring some of the testifiers to display the unit. Mr. Levine?
Okay.
Unless Len Levine, I believe. Correct.
Levine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Leader. I appreciate your authoring this bill. And I'd just like to say before this committee, I've recognized and appreciated the work of Representative Leader for many years when he was Polk County Engineer, and in my years as Commissioner of the Department of Transportation, we worked closely together and secured the largest funding 2 years in a row for the transportation system with his assistance. I'm here today representing a company called Safe Lights, that whose president, Mr. Knox, is here to demonstrate to you how this sign works and the clearing up the question of whether or not it could be used, and it's during the night, day. And there was a question because the law was ambiguous and it didn't include this, and so this just clarifies that.
Let me have him.
If Mr. Knox would come up here, there's a plug alongside. He can plug it in, and we'll show you very quickly how this works. And as Representative Leader said, it's not mandatory, but it gives the option for increased safety because of the visibility of this.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Tom Knox. I'm president of a company called Safe Lights that manufactures this device. What you see here is the current standard slow moving vehicle emblem. And what we've done is illuminate. If we were able to dim the lights, you'd see a much more dramatic application of that. But again, that's the way it is now, and our technology just allows it to look the same at night as it does during the daytime. Oh, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, if I may interrupt, basically the old reflectorized sheathing is pretty much dark at night, as you can see that it doesn't illuminate hardly at all, even under a, it does under a high beam headlight, but not that much, so it's pretty much, this makes it much more visible.
Okay. Good. Questions? Or comments? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Leader, I'm looking at the House Research Bill summary. And in the second paragraph, it talks about the requirement of certain luminous intensity. Am I correct in assuming that what that is referring to is that if you choose to use this device, it has to have a certain amount of luminance? I just want to confirm that we are talking about a permissive rather than a requirement.
Um, Mr. Williams.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Newman, the paragraph in the bill summary that you referred to summarizes a portion of the bill that was deleted in the amendment. Mm-hmm. So that no longer applies.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Other questions or comments? If not, Representative Leader removes his motion that House File 614 be recommended to pass as amended, and we will lay this over the possible inclusion in the transportation policy omnibus bill. All in favor of that motion, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The bill passed and I'm laying it on the table. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Well, thank you all again. We finished the blaze of speed here, so we're going to adjourn.